Ben, Paul Beeston is sticking around as president of the Blue Jays, an extension signed with the club to stay until the end of 2015. So shoe wearing without socks, that's going to be in trend for at least another year.
Exactly. And it took a lot of to and froing to get here. I mean, I think that if you would ask a lot of people, myself included, this time a week ago, there would have been a ton of uncertainty as for where Beeston stood in the organization and whether Dan Duquette might be the person presiding over the Blue Jays in 2015. But now we know that Beeston has that endorsement from Rogers ownership, and he's going to be the one watching this team as it tries to reach the playoffs in 2015.
Ben, how does this all look on the Blue Jays from the baseball world perspective? Because obviously Beeston's a well-liked, well-respected guy around baseball, and this just seemingly has been completely not treated, but this situation just been handled all the wrong ways by this ownership. Is that kind of what the sense is in baseball?
Yeah, I think that if you had simply said 6 months ago that the Blue Jays would end up extending Beeston for 1 year, then nobody would have blinked an eye. And
right.
So in that sense, it's not the end point that's at all objectionable. I mean, Paul Beeston is a longtime Blue Jays employee, MLB employee, all kinds of credentials, connections. He's certainly qualified to be their team president. But the way that they got here is definitely not good. I mean, you look at all of the public negotiations that went on and all the distractions that affected, to one extent or another, everyone from front office employees like Alex Anthopoulos, who had to answer after it, to players like Jeff Hoffman, whose name was in rumors, and of course to Beeston himself, who had to account for his own future. I think that it's safe to say this is nowhere near a textbook way to handle this. But that being said, the Blue Jays have Beeston in place right now, and at the end of the year when his contract is up and they start looking around for replacements, they're going to have a very, very appealing position that a lot of high-ranking executives around baseball are going to have interest in.
Well, no doubt that this could have been handled in perhaps a more private and a better way all around. But really, I don't see that big a deal about it. If Beeston was so upset, he wouldn't come back for another year. He is, and then he's going to retire. Then he's going to be done. But the way I look at it is Paul Beeston wanted to retire. He had a contract that ended. He wanted to retire. That was something that he was going to do. The Toronto Blue Jays went looking for somebody to replace him. It became public, you know, that was who was their number one target, it seems. That couldn't happen. That couldn't work out. So, you know, you talk to Beeston. Beeston says, all right, I'll hang around for another year, give you another year to look for the guy you want. Yeah, that's the way I see it. I don't have a big problem with it.
I see what you're saying there, Jeff. I know that, again, in the end result, it's not such a bad thing. But along the way, I mean, the Blue Jays ownership reached out to the Chicago White Sox about hiring Kenny Williams, not realizing that Kenny Williams is employed by Jerry Reinsdorf, who's essentially one of Beeston's best and longest standing friends in the business. So I think, you know, you look at it along the way there, and with Duquette and the Orioles, there's the possibility that somebody like Peter Angelos, who owns Baltimore, could file tampering charges because it did become so public, and the Orioles, as a result, had to account for where their executive, their top baseball executive, was going to be working in the period of a couple months. So I think in those senses, you look at, you know, the future of a couple other executives with other teams and how they were brought into it. Maybe for the Blue Jays, it's fine, but I don't think that's the way you want to conduct business around the league.
Baseball editor for Sportsnet.ca, Ben Nicholson-Smith, joining us here on Sportsnet tonight. That's Jeff. I'm George. Ben, the question that really sits with me is Alex Anthopoulos, and we know that Beeston is retiring at the end of the 2015 season. I think whatever happens to the Blue Jays this season, if heaven forbid they win the World Series, he's going to ride off into the sunset as a champion. But what does this mean for the future of Alex Anthopoulos? Clearly that this is Beeston's guy, and he's always stood by AA as his general manager. But does this 2015, is this kind of the make-or-break year with AA because he won't have Beeston's backing anymore within the organization?
Well, I think 2015 was going to be a huge year for Anthopoulos no matter what. And whether there was Dan Duquette in place or somebody else, Paul Beeston, it really doesn't matter. Whoever's in place, this will be It's been six off seasons now that Anthopoulos has been at the reins of the Blue Jays, and you have to think that you'd expect to reach the playoffs after that much time, and with the number of resources that he has, he certainly expects to reach the playoffs and hopes to be in October. So I think it's very safe to say that this is a high-stakes season for Anthopoulos. The Blue Jays need to continue to show improvement under him for the franchise to really want and believe that this is the right way to go. And that being said, he's done tons of great moves this offseason. It seems like they're very well positioned to contend in 2015 with the team that he has put in place. So I think regardless, it would have been a big year for Anthopoulos. But with Beeston being in place, that's probably a good thing for him, just because Beeston is, as you said, a very longstanding backer of Anthopoulos, a big supporter, someone he communicates with very well. So in that sense, it's probably a good thing for Anthopoulos.
Okay, so we know who's pulling the strings, at least for a good chunk of time here. As far as those that are on the field, bullpen help, maybe adding to the rotation so that Aaron Sanchez could remain in the bullpen. What's the latest here as far as what you're hearing and what tires have been kicked?
You know, it's very quiet, and it has been for a while on the Blue Jays bullpen search. Maybe it's just because we've been so distracted by the presidential talk, but I think what's clear is the Blue Jays have a need at the back of their bullpen, have for the entire offseason. And right now it seems as though they have some money to spend, not a ton, but maybe in the neighborhood of $5 or $6 million. So if you look around the league, you're not going to get a superstar reliever for that price, but you could get some useful players. So I know that Francisco Rodriguez has been linked to the Brewers. Maybe he's out of their price range, but you could look around at some lower tier guys, maybe a Burke Badenhop. There are always going to be names out there looking for relief work this time of year. And the Blue Jays, I expect, will check in on many of them, see where the prices are, and then make a couple offers accordingly.
Ben, we know the Canadian dollar is starting to dip, and the Blue Jays get a lot of their revenues in U.S. dollars. Does that affect what they want to do long-term? Because we know the payroll is going to be around $138 million, but if you put that into Canadian dollars, that's a hell of a lot more money than $138.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a big shift. I think that anytime you see a big shift in the Canadian dollar, it will have an impact on teams that play north of the border. So it certainly impacted the Expos and the Blue Jays when the Canadian dollar was very weak around 2000 and before that. So I think at the same time, though, you're going to be insured against big spikes and fluctuations in terms of currency. So if there's a huge drop in the value of the Canadian dollar or a huge spike one day, I don't think that means the Blue Jays are going to be completely at the mercy of those changes. I think they're going to have some sort of insurance taken out against that.
How about this for you guys here? Seeing that number of players with $100 million contracts, you look at the NHL, there's three. You look at the NBA, there's four. You look at the NFL, that's 10. And according to Business Insider, 41 in Major League Baseball.
Wow.
41. I mean, wow. If this is going to continue to trend in Major League Baseball, I know the Blue Jays do not want to sign players beyond 5 years, but $100 million contracts, if that is going to be the trend, do you see the Blue Jays going with any kind of trend like that, or are they gonna stick to their guns?
Yeah, it's a great question. I would think that, you know, the Blue Jays would probably end up going with the industry. That's probably a safe bet, and who knows whether that would be a free agent or potentially some of their young players right now that we're watching break into the major leagues a few years down the road could have a case for a big contract. But that number of 41 is definitely going to increase, and I think it'll increase too within the course of the next couple of months. I mean, you look at the months of February and March and April, those are typically very, very productive times across Major League Baseball for signing some huge contract extensions. I'll be surprised if that number doesn't grow up to 45, 46, 47 within the span of a few months.
Ben, we heard the name thrown around and the Blue Jays for some strange reasons, and we're a team that we're connected to. A guy like Steven Strasburg in Washington, we know they opened up their vaults and signed one of those $100 million deals with a guy like Max Scherzer. Is that a guy that that could potentially be on the Blue Jays' radar, or that's already a non-starter because he's a Scott Boras guy, and we all know the Blue Jays don't like to deal with a guy like Scott Boras.
Yeah, I don't see it as a obvious fit. I mean, you never know, and I wouldn't put it past the Blue Jays to inquire on a player whose talent is really impressive, and Steven Strasburg would easily slot in at the top of basically any rotation in baseball. But I think when it comes to the Nationals, they seem to like their starting pitching depth, and the kind of return that they could demand for Strasburg would just be extreme. I mean, they could easily demand any team's top prospect. You know, in the Blue Jays' case, would that be a Daniel Norris and then some? Clearly, if you're trading Strasburg, you're going to get multiple pieces back, including an elite piece. So I think in that sense, we've seen the Blue Jays back away from any requests involving their very top prospects this year. I mean, for all of the moves that they've made, probably the top prospect they traded was, what, Kendall Graveman? So I think we've seen them really hold on to their top guys. I would expect that to continue to be the case.
Yeah, and another example of which is Jeff Blair on Sportsnet.ca writes that the Atlanta Braves asked the Blue Jays if they would make Hoffman the focal point of a deal for outfielder Justin Upton, who is a year away from free agency. Hoffman would have been a player to be named later. The answer was an emphatic no. So you're absolutely right about that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, with Upton and with Strasburg, and Josh Donaldson would fit into this too, but you see the Blue Jays going after these high-end players. Clearly, they want to get guys who can be impact big leaguers, guys who can join that core that they have of Bautista, Encarnacion, Stroman, some really high-impact players. But if the asking price is really exorbitant, as it certainly seems to have been in those talks with Atlanta, then they're going to walk away because there's absolutely no sense in giving up 6-7 years of a guy in Jeff Hoffman who might be a number two or number three starter at the big league level just to get 1 year of Justin Upton at a time that Justin Upton is going to be making substantial dollars because he's in his final year of arbitration.
Ben, we all know that the Blue Jays made a huge splash at the beginning of the offseason, and the talk was, oh, there's lots of time for the Blue Jays to fill all these holes, and all of a sudden we're getting closer to that day where pitchers and catchers report to spring training. Are the Blue Jays really going to go into the season with this bottom third in the lineup, Ben?
I think the lineup might actually remain the way it is. And I know that you're looking at potentially Meister's Tourist, Dalton Pompey. I mean, there are some questions in the bottom third of that order. I wouldn't expect it to be particularly productive on offense. But I also don't really think it's going to change. And I think that if the Blue Jays do make changes, it would be to the bullpen. This is me, you know, speculating here, but I definitely do think they're going to upgrade their bullpen between now and opening day. It might not be between now and the date that pitchers and catchers report, but there are always deals to be made once spring training begins. Maybe that's a waiver claim. Maybe it's a small trade or a free agent signing. And I do think the Blue Jays will be active in that department.
Ben, I wanted to ask you this all day. In Major League Baseball's new commissioner, Rob Manfred, one of the things that he's talked about was in an effort to boost some offense in Major League Baseball, that he'd be open to the idea of discussing getting rid of the shift in baseball. What do you think about that?
Well, I think it's a very bad idea, to be completely honest.
Yeah.
And I think that I know the shift can get on people's nerves, and that's totally valid. I understand that it's a different way of positioning players, and it's new and potentially unnerving. But at the same time, it's a strategy. And I don't think we want to start telling teams, no, you can use this strategy and you can't use this strategy. I mean, there are no specific places on the diamond where someone has to stand. So there never have been any rules about that. I don't see why we should impose them now, just when so many defenses are starting to operate in a much more efficient way around baseball. So to me, it doesn't seem like a very good idea. In basketball, you would never mandate that, oh, you have to play zone defense no matter what. You know, it doesn't matter what the opponent is. I mean, clearly, if a team wants to play man-to-man defense in basketball, that's allowed. They can do whatever they want. And I think that in baseball, that same sort of freedom should be allowed, and it gives teams one more avenue to distinguish themselves from one another.